Hello, and welcome back to the Full Circle Healing Podcast, where we merge modern cutting-edge science with traditional healing wisdom and everything in between to help you come full circle back to your original natural state of health and well-being. I'm your host, Michael, and over the past 15 years, I've helped hundreds of thousands of people find the information, practices, tools, resources, and experts they needed to find their way back to optimal health. Our guest in this episode is our friend and resident nutrigenomic expert, Jacqueline Downs. Jacqueline is the author of the academically published book, Enhancing Fertility Through Functional Medicine, Using Nutrigenomics to Solve Unexplained Infertility. And she's a functional nutrigenomics practitioner that helps clients and practitioners move past puzzling roadblocks and individualized protocols through the use of genomic interpretation, functional lab testing, and a meticulous health history investigation. In this episode, you will learn why everyone interested in understanding their body and their health may want to consider nutrigenomic testing. You'll learn how our genes impact our ability to detox, produce hormones, digest food, and so much more. You'll learn what environmental factors and lifestyle decisions can impact our genetic expression in a positive or negative way. And you'll learn what to look for and what to look out for when considering genetic testing. This and so much more, including some of Jacqueline's favorite tips to optimize your genetic expression in a positive way. And if you dig this conversation and you're interested in running some genetic testing with Jacqueline, head over to rebelhealth.co/genetics and we'll get you all the necessary info and details. It's been a complete game changer for me and allowed me to get to the bottom of a long-standing health condition that I personally have called hemochromatosis, which is high iron. Only through the genetic interpretation with Jacqueline and her friends have we been able to figure out why my body accumulates so much iron and what we might be able to do to stop it. So now let's get going with Jacqueline and learn more. Hey, Jacqueline, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Michael, it's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is not back. This is a new podcast, but we've done other podcasts and interviews and things. So it's a welcome back. And I always enjoy our conversations and I always learn a bunch of stuff. And I think our audience is going to learn a lot here too. This is a topic that I think is gaining some steam in the health world for good reason. And I think it's something that's really important for people to hear about, to understand, to learn about. As you know, it's been for me personally, probably the biggest, I'll call it puzzle piece or missing piece of my own. For people who don't know, I have a condition called hemochromatosis, which is excess ferritin or iron, which causes a lot of problems long-term wise for health. It contributes to a ton of different health problems. And it's been through nutrigenomic testing that I've actually been able to get some answers as to the why and the how and everything that is with my condition, and some hope that I can actually get this under control and reduce my chances for developing a whole bunch of scary health problems that I found out about it about 15 years ago. And I was like, I'll deal with it later when it matters. And now I'm almost 45. So now I'm like, I think it's later. I think I have to do this, but this has been my own personal like key. And so I'm excited to share it with people. So let's just jump right in. I'm going to ask you, I used the term in that intro there, nutrigenomics, and people are probably a little familiar with the word genetic or genetic testing, but what is nutrigenomic testing specifically? What does that mean?
Okay, so nutrigenomics is essentially the intersection between how nutrition affects our genetic expression and how our genes affect our health status. And so there are things that you can do in functional genetics and genomics, which are genes you can do something about. So every single gene makes an enzyme. And in order for that enzyme to work, regardless of how that gene is producing it, there are nutritional cofactors that are like the spark plugs or the gasoline that drive those processes. And so if you have a genetic variant that, for instance, slows down the production of that enzyme or the function of that enzyme, you can oftentimes compensate for that with adding more of that nutritional cofactor in.
As form of food or supplements, targeted things like that, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And you're mentioning genes and that something can be done or influenced, but we can't change our genes, right? Like if you do this kind of testing and you find out, we'll just talk about this. It tests what's called SNPs, right? Like, I don't know the long form of that. What's the...
single nucleotide polymorphisms.
Okay, what she said. And there's about a zillion and nine of these. I don't know how many actually are in the software you work with, but there's a lot.
Hundreds like of thousands.
Thousands, yeah. And what we're looking for when we do this kind of testing is mutations, I guess they're called, or
technically they're variants or SNPs. Variants. A mutation happens in less than 1% of a population, but a lot of people are just referring to them as mutations, even though that's technically incorrect.
So it's variants.
Yes, that's what I call them, variants or SNPs.
Okay. Okay. So, and these can have, it's one or two. Can you just homozygous
alleles? Yes. So your genetic blueprint is the same on day one as it is on your last day here on Earth, and that's why it's great to get genetic testing because you're never going to change. You don't need a baseline and a follow up, and so you get two copies, one from each parent. And so if you receive one variated copy from a parent, you are considered heterozygous. And if you get a variated copy from each parent, you're considered homozygous. And oftentimes, having a heterozygous variant can alter that gene or enzyme's functioning by a certain percentage. We'll just say, 30 to 40%. But having a homozygous variant can alter it up to, 70% or something like that. But just because you have a genetic variant does not mean that it is expressing. And we can talk about that then.
Be one of my follow-ups.
Right, yeah.
Are we all doomed?
One copy or two copies is essentially like, do you have none, which is called the wild type or the null? And then one is heterozygous, and two is also known as you have two of the risk alleles. So according to research, this is having this version of that gene is sets you up for the risk of whatever that risk is.
Okay. And I learned recently, because I've done consults now with you, with another colleague of yours, and with Dr. Bob Miller, who created the software that you guys work with. And so I've gotten a lot of information between the three of you from my, and it's interesting because there's some stuff that all three of you pointed out, and then there's some stuff that only one caught or saw, because it's a wide range of stuff on there. And so depending on what the focus of the conversation was, we kind of stuck in different areas. But I learned that some of these variants can influence things in a speeding it up kind of way. Like it'll make more of a certain enzyme, which then might clear something out faster than you want it to be cleared, for example. Or it can mean it slows something down and you make too little of an enzyme and then you don't clear the thing or use the thing or break the thing down or whatever that enzyme does. And I've got a lovely combination of both where, I absorb too much iron. I don't utilize it enough. I don't. And it's a perfect storm, but I learned that these can go in either direction, right? Like a variant can mean some process is either sped up or it's slowed down.
Yes. And this is why you never want to just test a handful of genes, because there are genes and enzymes upstream and downstream. So conceivably, it could even itself out. If you have a gene that produces an enzyme super fast, but you also metabolize it super fast, it kind of evens out. So it's like, a lot of people refer to the I Love Lucy episode where she's working in a chocolate factory and these chocolates are coming out of the conveyor belt. And so if, you have a really fast worker and the chocolate starts coming out of the conveyor belt faster, that's going to be able to keep up, right? And maintain a homeostasis. But say the conveyor belt speeds up, but somebody is really fatigued or you're missing a worker that day, they're not going to be able to keep up with the clearance of that substance and vice versa. So yes. So
and then you have too many chocolates.
What?
What was the thing in the episode? Was it chocolates?
Yes. Yeah, so she's like shoving them in her mouth.
Then you'd have too many chocolates, which in this instance is actually a bad thing, but too many chocolate is never a bad thing. So, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And so what can this actually apply to? I've mentioned my own personal experience in that my body absorbs too much iron. It doesn't utilize it properly. I also have some issues in my ATP production cycle because I have too much iron in my body, but it's not going to where it's supposed to go and doing what it's supposed to do. And so I may actually have some symptoms of anemia because it's not being utilized in the right way, even though my ferritin is like through the roof. So other than iron metabolism and iron issues, what other kind of information can people learn about themselves and their body and their processes or state of health from doing this testing?
So much. Pretty much like anything that you are puzzled about, there's probably an area in your genes or the software that looks at that. So yes, the iron, you know, so many people are told that they're anemic, but really it's that the iron's getting stuck in the cells and tissues. And then so their blood looks low. So adding in an iron supplement is really just fueling the fire, because iron, when it's improperly used, will oxidize and cause a lot of inflammation and oxidative stress. In addition to that, there are many, many other things that cause inflammation and oxidative stress. And that is the premise of my book. And I do have a chapter on iron dysregulation in my book, even though it was written towards the fertility demographic. The basic premise is common but lesser known causes of inflammation and oxidative stress that are at the root of all chronic conditions, including fertility challenges. These also include things like what other things are causing oxidative stress, whether it's, you know, free radicals, peroxynitrite, NOS uncoupling, whatever. That can be things like poor fatty acid utilization, right? So you're eating all these great fats, but is your body able to use it? Is the fat able to get into the cell to make ATP? And I have a chapter on fatty acid utilization in my book as well. Oxalates, which I have a chapter on. So some people have, they're just eating too high of an oxalate diet, more than their body can clear. But some people are genetically predisposed to just really not tolerating hardly any. And so you can see if it's a predisposition or if it's a secondary, the result of maybe too many antibiotics or poor fatty acid utilization or, you know, fungal overgrowth or something, or too high oxalates. What else? How fast your neurotransmitters might be degraded. And of course, methylation, but also your CYPs. There's a ton of CYPs. So that's your phase one, various phase two liver detox pathways, including methylation. And then especially glutathione. A lot of people just only know about glutathione as the master antioxidant. But maybe your glutathione looks good. And we talked about this in the masterclass, right? This is why, you know, for people that glutathione might cause an adverse reaction, maybe it's because it's getting stuck in the oxidized form and it's not able to get recycled around. But a lot of people forget about superoxide dismutase and catalase. So you could be totally fine with your glutathione genes, and maybe it's a SOD or catalase issue. And so knowing which antioxidants and where the wrenches are in the pathways can really help you to streamline your protocols and make sure that you're not wasting your money on supplements that aren't going to work or do a whole lot.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, there isn't an area that's untouched, I don't think. And as far as like what kind of health issue you're looking at, I think there's answers to almost anything in there. And yes, the I'm one of those people too with the enzymes and I now take catalase due to what the reports said. And it's not something, I was taking more of a systemic enzyme before. Mm-hmm. Bonus, catalase is something people always take to make less gray hair. Mm-hmm. But I found that out because that's what it says on the bottle when it comes. That's not why I ordered it, but it says like something about hair color. Mm-hmm. So it's been really helpful for me to know what to take and what not to take. And there are these people who, especially in the like chronic disease, chronic illness, chronic symptoms, mystery symptoms, complex illness world, that they read a book or they see some ad or they listen to a podcast and then they're like, I need to take that supplement. Mm-hmm. It works for everyone. And then they take it and they feel worse. And then they think, you know, oh, something's definitely wrong with me. And it's that there's very few things. There's a handful of stuff that's probably pretty good for almost anyone to take. And then there are things that are pushed as something that's really good for everyone to take that could cause people a lot of problems. And I found that this testing is often the thing people need to figure that out. And so they stop wasting so much money on supplements that aren't going to work or make them feel worse. And I also want to ping that you said it's something you only have to do once. Whereas mm-hmm. if somebody's running hormone tests, which have their place and are super valuable, like the Dutch and things like that are great, or running stool tests or running blood labs or running all these other kind of labs, all of those are snapshots in time that will change, and every practitioner will want you to run them and then do the things and then run them again and then probably run them again. And every time you run them, it costs a lot of money because a lot of functional labs are not covered by insurance and it's a difficult thing. So with genetic testing, you run it once, never changes, and you can work with that information to kind of guide, you know, the rest of your approach, knowing it's just another way to know more about yourself and your body and the way it metabolizes or doesn't metabolize. And I think it's just been, it's a missing piece for tons of practitioners and tons of DIY people that are trying to figure out their own health problems. So you mentioned that the genes can express a certain way that, you know, the single variant can influence up to 30% or around. You gave these numbers, but you mentioned that it doesn't always. And so you'd want to look at this information along with like medical history and symptoms and any other labs they have, right?
Yes. Yeah. So the genetics are not a diagnosis, but they provide a lot of clarity and a framework as to why something didn't work well or why something is happening with you. And then it pairs really nicely with labs.
Okay. Yeah. And like if I had run the genetic testing and all my iron metabolism stuff got flagged, but on my blood tests and my medical history and my symptoms, I had no symptoms or signs or anything pointing to anything that has to do with hemochromatosis or iron overload or anything. My ferritin levels were normal. All the iron metabolism levels were normal. I didn't have any symptoms. I'd be like, okay, that's something to kind of keep an eye on, but it's not something we have to do anything about right now. And then you actually learn more stuff that you could keep an eye on or pay attention to, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't have to do anything, right? Right? That's kind of how that would work.
Yes. Yeah. So it's kind of like good to know as I move into the future and I'm focusing on longevity, or if I have some weird symptoms pop up, maybe I'll know that this could be a cause of those symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. And now that this has become a little more popular, I know that because you know how the internet like stalks your conversations that you have and anything mm-hmm. that you look at. And I think sometimes ads are able to know what I'm thinking because mm-hmm. I'll see ads for stuff I don't remember saying anything to anybody about. But the genetic testing, I see ads now and I see some companies out there that are harping either on a few, you just need to run these genes and just, you need to know these. It's always MTHFR or maybe COMT, or there's like a couple other ones. Mm-hmm. Or they run a really incomplete panel. So what, and then it's really cheap and it's really accessible. And then people come to us and they're like, hey, this is only $80 or something. Like, I already ran it. Can you guys interpret this? Can you use this information? I'm sure you get asked that a lot. Like, I already ran this thing that was really cheap. Can you use this and tell me way more stuff than is on it by looking at it? And it's like, no. But so what should people look for and look out for when they're, say they listen to this and they're interested in genetic testing? Because even if they listen to this, now you're probably going to see ads for genetic testing. Uh-huh. But what should they look for or look out for if they want to take this step?
Okay, I have been ranting on Instagram about this recently because
good for you.
I've been saying we're sort of in the wild, wild west of genetic testing right now. So everybody's jumping on the bandwagon and they're just looking at MTHFR or methylation or a handful of genes. And then they're getting this report that is either really generic, telling people to just move their body more and get sunshine and stay away from bad fats, right? Which you don't need a genetic test to know that. Or they're getting information that is really contradictory. So they'll say, oh, you need, you know, based on this genetic SNP, you should take methylfolate, but based on this genetic SNP, you should avoid methylfolate. And people are like, I don't know what to do. This is really contradictory, and it just causes analysis paralysis. So that's why you don't want to go with a company that only looks at a handful of genes, because no gene works in isolation, and there's so many genes upstream and downstream that you can't get a full picture based on a few. But also you want to make sure that they're not just giving you an automated canned response. So that's basically all the companies that are set up for really high volume, because it's just, they're just plugging or copying and pasting information. If you have this genetic variant, then we'll put this information in, and it's not personalized at all. So you want to have a trained eye that knows your medical history, knows your symptoms, knows what worked, what didn't work, you know, knows your exposures, that kind of stuff. To create a truly customized plan for you. And regarding price, I just made a post about this. The companies that are really, really inexpensive, the huge mega companies, are not making their money selling you your genetic test kit. They're making their money off of selling your genetic information to third parties. And who knows what they're doing with that. And so that's why they make it so affordable, so that they can make more money once they've gotten your information.
Yeah. And I think that that needs to be mentioned again, because one of those companies, I believe it was Ancestry.com, got bought by BlackRock or one of those giant investment like conglomerates that owns trillions of dollars worth of the biggest companies in the country. There's BlackRock and I don't remember the name of the other one, but
Vanguard,
all of those things that own. If anybody's ever gone down that rabbit hole, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, that might be for the better. But there's giant investment conglomerates that own trillions of dollars worth of U.S. companies. And one of them purchased Ancestry.com, which is one of the places that runs genetic testing, that now the largest, I don't know what to call that, money entity in the world, owns the genetic data of everyone who ran the testing through Ancestry.com. And that may not bother you, that may bother you, but that's definitely something to consider when choosing your source for testing. And I know that I've mentioned Dr. Bob Miller a couple times in this podcast. We're going to have him on the podcast too, so people will get to go high nerd level on that podcast, because Dr. Miller is the one who created the software that Jacqueline works with. Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk just a minute about the testing process, and I don't know what to call it. I don't know the right word. Like the genetic testing and reports that you work with, like how it works and how people do it and why you work with that software and that testing process and why you're so confident about it.
Yes. So I do want to state that I got hired by Bob probably, I don't know, 12 years ago to be his research assistant for MTHFR. And I giggle about that now, because it quickly turned into the methylation pathway and the transsulfuration pathway and pathways intersecting other pathways, and, you know, to the hundreds of thousands of SNPs that it is today. But I have consistently felt confident about using that software. So based on the information, you know, that software was developed, and seeing all of the other companies that through their sample reports or what my clients have brought to me saying, what's this mean? Can you help me make sense of this? I've seen a lot of other reports, and they are only showing one or two SNPs for each gene when there can be hundreds of different SNPs for a particular gene. And so I'm seeing how much of a sliver of information these reports provide, and also the limited amount of genes themselves. And so the software that I use and the test kit are Bob's for the functional genomic analysis. And it's for practitioners only to utilize and order. So it's not direct to consumer, because there's just kind of like professional line supplements, right? It's, you need to know certain things, and it's held to a certain level of integrity, I believe. And so,
you need that trained eye on the reports. These are not super simple, reports that the software generates. I mean, I got all gung ho before my, consult with Dr. Miller when, and real quick to speak on the idea of, the not very many SNPs being included on other testing softwares. You reviewed mine from 23andMe data, and it was the old 23andMe, so it actually had more data than the current 23andMe has. But when he looked at that, given my medical history and what he could see from that, he said, this is incomplete. You got to run ours. And so when I ran his and then met with him, he pointed out to me a bunch of things that he sees on there that weren't on the other one, that gives him a bunch of takeaway information that I would not have had otherwise. Because he would say, well, they only run 2 out of these 12, and they only run 3 out of this 16. And look, you have variance in most of the ones that they don't run, and I wouldn't know that, and this influences this. And so he pointed out a few of those instances to me where having that incomplete data would have changed my what he could possibly tell me from the reports. And so there was more I was able to learn from that report than the other one. And I cut myself off to mention that, and I don't remember what the other thing was that I was going to say, so I might come back to it.
Okay.
But we were talking about something else, and I just wanted to point out that that happened to me in real time, and I got to like watch that take place. Oh, the report itself. I got all gung ho when I got the report before my consult with him. So I'm like, I'm going to open this thing up and look at it, and I'm going to figure some stuff out. Mm-hmm. And after my eyes were finished glazing over, I did start to read some of the things. And like, I have a master's in exercise physiology. I've been in functional medicine now for 10, 12 years. I know stuff, and it was still like, I was like, Jacqueline, someone come help me. So it is really, really helpful to have somebody who's super well trained in it to review your information, because it can be overwhelming. There's so much info in there, and a lot of it isn't going to be super relevant to you given your situation. Like, and you won't need to figure it out. So to have somebody who can cross-reference your medical history with any other labs with that report is just as important as getting the report itself. So I like that that's how you guys run it, that it has to go through the professional. And again, this is something you only have to do once. It literally never changes. So it's not a retest all the time thing. And it is funny that he hired you to be a research assistant for MTHFR. And now you're on social media going on rants about why companies that only test MTHFR are doing a disservice to literally everyone. But that's like the gateway gene.
Yep. I almost jokingly titled, I actually gave a grand rounds, nursing grand rounds talk called MTHFR is a gateway gene, because it is the first gene that people usually hear about, and opens them up to the concept that their genes affect their health and vice versa. But it's just, there's so much more beyond that. And like I said, no gene works in isolation.
Yeah.
And so that's why I had created that affiliate program, because there's so many practitioners that want to add genetics into their practice, but it's just so, you know, we say it's like drinking from a fire hydrant, right? Like,
I'll vouch for it. I've been on with 3 of you guys now, and even just my own information. This wasn't teaching me how to interpret everything. It was just talking to me about my things. And I was like, whoa, like, I think I took about 7 pages of frantically scribbled notes when I talked to Bob, and in like shorthand and arrows, and this thing leads to this thing. And there were instances too, you just mentioned how the downstream, upstream situations can kind of counteract each other. And there were situations where he's like, well, that one might not, because you have this over here. And he showed me again, like, if you didn't know this, this would mean this, but because this is here, you may have a chance that this isn't as messed up as it looks, kind of,
right,
sort of.
Right.
But I, yeah, it is the, it, it, when I first started learning about genetics, it was only MTHFR. It was like the, but then there were people I'm not going to name that decided to make that like the most important thing that anyone can ever learn about their health. And if they have this genetic variant, then they're doomed and they need to take these six supplements every day forever. And if they don't have it, they're fine and nothing's wrong with them and they'll be okay. And that is not responsible. Guidance.
Well, it's either these people don't know what they don't know and they're just trying to make money off of it, or they do know and they are just capitalizing on the fact that the consumer doesn't know. So I just used, I don't know, this analogy
that's
just
popping
my head yesterday is like these people, they just get this, we'll just say a pigtail, right? Like the tail of a pig. And they're like, I have it. This is all I need. I figured out all the information, but they don't realize that there's the whole rest of the pig that they're not seeing. They're not even aware of. They just think that this pigtail is the whole thing. And so what people don't know is actually causing them a bunch of wasted time and money.
I agree. And I think it's probably about 50-50 from what I've seen of which instance is the case. Either they think the tail is the whole pig, or they know the tail is not the whole pig, but they know that you don't know that the tail is not the whole pig, and they make a lot of money, which I think is even worse. But either way, it's best to look at the whole pig.
Yes. So, yeah.
And to have somebody who is well-versed in pork to help you figure out what's what. So the last thing I want to ask is, we talked about the fact that you're not doomed and that a lot of things influence how these genetic variants may express. And so that people might have some sort of genetic variant that they see, but then it doesn't seem to be presenting itself. It's not causing any problems. And there's a lot of factors that influence genetic expression. And you talk about a lot of them in your book, and the book is geared a lot towards fertility from a nutrigenomic perspective, but the information in there, most of it applies to anyone.
Yes.
And there's a lot of things people can do to, I don't know if I'm going to use the right words here, but to optimize their genetic expression in a positive way. You can correct me if that's not the right way
no,
to say
100%,
it.
100%, you nailed it.
Okay, and so what would be a few tips that would be applicable to almost anyone who wants to give their genes the best chance of expressing in a healthy way?
Yes, and I do have a whole chapter on this in my book. So because that's the foundation. Okay. And those are the things, you know, like I mentioned before, that these half-assed interpretations provide. And that is, you know, quality sleep. Sleep is the foundation. I mentioned that in my book, right? So do whatever you can to make sure that you are optimizing your sleep, making sure that you're getting outside in the fresh air, on the earth, in the sunshine. And then I think the biggest thing, and I even dare I, you know, go there and say it, but in my book, I say that I think it is a high likelihood that our detoxification ability is more important, or at least just as important, as our nutritional status this day and age, because of all of the toxins we are bombarded with that our poor livers and kidneys were never designed to deal with. And so optimizing your detoxification pathways by first avoiding those toxins. So like buying organic, buying natural whenever you can, you know, avoiding all the VOCs, but also environmental toxins like mold and mycotoxins, which I have a chapter on too. Those will just screw up everything, all the systems, all the cells, the bile, the liver, all of that. And so it's our environment and our daily habits that really set us up for proper genetic expression or poor genetic expression.
I like that you mentioned that the first step of improving your detox capacity is reducing your exposure to toxins. And that came up a lot in our detox, toxicity and detox masterclass that we did it's a year and a half ago now. That was almost everybody's recommend, because everybody's like, what do I do to detox? How do I detox? I want to do a detox. And it's like, well, what are you putting on your body? What are you breathing? What are you drinking? What are you eating? What are you exposed to every day?
Because Shout out to Laura Adler. She's amazing.
Yeah. We just had a webinar with Laura, and we have a 5-week workshop series on our site called Detoxify Your Life with Laura, where it's the first thing she's done that she teaches consumers. Mm-hmm. And she goes through like the kitchen and the different different parts of the house and what to look for. And, but she harps on that all the time because Laura teaches toxicity and ways to live cleaner. She doesn't teach detoxification stuff. And she said, this is step one. You go to the other people for the rest of the steps, but step one is lowering the burden, because when the toxic burden is higher on the system in the body, it functions worse.
Yes.
And so then that compounds on itself. It's like sand in a gas tank. Don't put sand in there. And the less sand you put, the better the engine's going to work. And so that is the first step. Like, so many people want to jump right to these, and this is a side rant, but so many people want to jump to all these like complex protocols to support detox, or they want to only eat green juice for a month or some like wild thing. Yet they're putting like poison things on their body, and they're burning scented candles, and they're, you know, doing all these kind of things, Febreze and fabric softeners and all this stuff. And it's like, no, start.
Right. Well, and then, and I kind of ranted about this in an Instagram post, is like, people just go and they do the liver cleanse right away. But if you're not pooping every day and your bile is not flowing, those toxins are just going to get recirculated. And so I have a chapter on detoxification and the proper way to detoxify, because doing a liver cleanse isn't going to get you really far. First off, if you're not able to eliminate it, but second, if you're still breathing in the Febreze and all that bullshit, excuse my language.
Oh, you can say that on this show. It's okay. We're not G-rated. So I love that continually gets brought up. So prioritizing sleep. I love that you mentioned going outside. I just was in the mountains for a week, and it's incredible what it did, like almost immediately. And it's the best that we have a one-year-old child, and it's probably the best he's slept ever. And it's even stayed a couple of days of being home, which we were like, oh, now that we're home, is it going to go back to how it was? And so far, I don't want to jinx anything, but it hasn't. And so those two things kind of go hand in hand too. You'll sleep better the more time you spend outside and in nature and resetting the circadian rhythm. So it's really simple stuff. Like it's really simple stuff. And that's what comes up all the time when I ask that question, is really simple stuff. Yes, we can get into the weeds and talk about biochemical pathways and all this kind of stuff. But if you're not doing the foundational things, that's not where you start. So,
yes, 100%. And so a lot of my clients are the people that are already doing all of those things and they're still experiencing stuff. So then we can kind of jump in and get more targeted and really biochemical there.
Yeah. All right. Well, if somebody wants to learn more about you, the genetic testing that we keep talking about, and you've got something to share too, a cheat sheet, which is the big three most impactful genes, right?
Yes, and MTHFR is not one of them on that cheat sheet. I'm not discounting the importance of MTHFR, but I think that these are ones that deserve some spotlight.
Okay, so we'll have the link to that below in the show notes. And where do they go? You mentioned your Instagram rants. So where's the website? Where's the Instagram?
The Instagram, I am still currently Functional Fertility Solutions. And then my website is just my name, jaclyndowns.com, JACLYNDOWNS. And if you want sort of just like a quick tab of all my things, you can go to the resources page at the top and then you can work with me there. I do have a mini course, Introduction to Nutrigenomics and the Functional Genomic Analysis. It's about 30 to 40 minutes. And then I also have links to the genetic interpretations, and I have a video that kind of explains the benefits of it.
Awesome. So much goodies. So many goodies there. I recommend everyone go check it out. And again, it Functional Fertility Solutions on Instagram. And I'll give a plug to your book title.
Enhancing Fertility Through Functional Medicine, Using Nutrigenomics to Solve Unexplained Infertility. It's
published by... And I want to reiterate that it's really good, even if you're not someone who's trying to have a baby, that most of the information in the book and that you share on social media, a high percentage of it is relevant to anybody who wants to reduce inflammation and oxidative stress and get their body in a better functioning state. So thank you for coming back and chatting with me. Thanks for sharing so much good info on what can be an overwhelming topic and making it more approachable. I really always enjoy any time we get to connect.
Same. Thank you so much, Michael.